Lord, help us to learn your word. Lord, it's overwhelming at times. And Lord, to be honest, we've been taught a lot of wrong things. Not because people aren't meaning well. They're probably taught wrong things and they just pass them on or whatever. But help us to rightly divide the word of truth. And we know it takes time. It takes looking at the whole passage, not just a verse. Or looking at sometimes at the whole Bible and not just a book even to get it all right. Lord, help us now as we continue to look at Abram, that we might learn from him and learn about you. We pray this in Jesus' name, amen. I'm not going to run, but I'm going to go fast. I'm going to walk fast today, okay? So I hate approaching the Word of God fast, because that's like trying to stuff down a steak, and you just don't get it, enjoy it fast. Okay, so, but this, I think, is probably able to do that, maybe. So, at least a little better. Okay, let me read the passage. It's all of Genesis 13. Yes, we're covering an entire chapter in one day. Everybody should go, ooh, yeah, okay, all right. That was heartfelt. Okay, anyway, but, I mean, it's picking up a little bit, speed-wise. It's not like the 30,000 weeks that we were in Genesis 1 and 2, which deserved that. Okay. Anyway, let me read. Then Abram went from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. By the way, he's heading north to the south. Okay. He's coming from Egypt, right? Okay. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. All of us can relate to that, no doubt. Just kidding. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel to the place where where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. Sounds like my kid's playroom. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no more strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord and like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abram, "After Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you." Then Abram moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord. This is an awesome passage. Number one, the first one, not hard. Abram travels back to Canaan. Abram travels back to Canaan. Anybody remember how we left last week? Where was Abram at? It kind of gives us a hint here. He was in Egypt. What happened there?
He tried to make friends with the Pharaoh.
Tried to keep things cool by what? He told Sarah.
Yeah.
wasn't lying. But it might as well have been a lie because he didn't tell the whole truth. Jane was asking about this last night. Something. It really is a lie because he didn't tell Pharaoh all the information he needed to know. So a half-truth ends up being falsehood, right? He told Sarah, "You're beautiful. Tell him you're my sister," which in Genesis 20, he explains to Abimelech, "She is my sister. She's my half-sister. We have the same father and not the same mother," right? It wasn't a lie. It just wasn't everything that Pharaoh would be wanting to know and needed to know, right? And then basically Pharaoh says, "What have you done to me?" He chastises. Here's this unbeliever and he chastises Abram. "What have you done to me? I could have made her my wife. I could have, you know, basically committed adultery with her." Which is funny, but when unsaved people start lecturing you about morality, you've gone on the wrong path. Okay? About your morality. Okay? And then he says, "Pack up your stuff and get out of here." Okay? You have to take that. Pharaoh tells, "Get your stuff and get out of here. I've had enough trouble already. I don't want any more trouble." So then, take that in context. Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had. By the way, Pharaoh had given him all kinds of stuff because of Sarah. So that might be in part why Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and gold. That's the first time we hear that. We know he had stuff. We don't know how long he was in Egypt. He had stuff before he went. He had even more when he came out. Okay? He was very rich. Is that wrong? No. Nothing wrong with that. Okay? It's not how much God gives you. It's what you do with what God gives you. Right? God had blessed Abraham with great wealth. So he's just traveling back. Number two, Abram calls on the name of the Lord. Abram calls on the name of the Lord. What does that mean? This is a rabbit trail, but it came up today in the service. I brought it up. Who calls on the name of the Lord? Everyone here, Jim? A saved person. People use Romans 10:13 all the time in a tract as a final thing. "For whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved." Well, either that's true or he that believes in him is not condemned, and he that believes not is condemned. It's either belief or calling saves. Shall we close in prayer? Yes. In fact, if people would read Romans 10:13 with 10:14 and even 10:12, 13 and 14, then they would understand that Paul is not giving how you get saved. Romans 10:12 says, "For the same Lord is Lord to both Jew and Greek, to all who call upon him." Okay? So, and then he quotes, Romans 10:13 is a quote. Some Bibles will put quotes around and italicize it for you or whatever. Where's it a quote from? Anyone? Guess?
Isaiah. I'm not mistaken. Isaiah.
It's not Isaiah. It's Joel 2:32. Okay? And it's talking about end times. What will happen in the end times? This specific people at a certain time, a certain place, the sun will be dark and the moon will be turned red, blah, blah, blah. Stuff like this, okay? It's looking into the future. But he says, Paul quotes that. He says, "The same Lord is Lord to all who call on him." And then he says, "For," and then he quotes his verse. You know what he's using in the verse? To prove his point in verse 12? If it's the same Lord as Lord on all who call on him, what's the key verse in Romans 10:13 then? "For whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. He quotes that from the Old Testament. His point is proven by the word whoever, not calls. And then he comes in and he says, and how shall they, the specific people, specific time and specific place, call on him? Another word for call is pray. How shall they call him in whom they have not? What did Jim say? Believe. You can't pray to someone you haven't already believed in. Prayer is not what you do to get saved. Belief is what you do to get saved. Believers call on the name of the Lord. That is a synonym for all who call on him. Is a synonym for believer. Okay? So those who call, prayer is a believing benefit. You don't pray to someone you don't believe in. It's not an evidence there. But it's something that they will do. And how are they going to call on him in whom they have not believed? And how will they at a specific time, specific place, specific people believe if they've never heard of him? It's following logically backwards to say, how shall they hear unless someone preaches? How will someone preach to them, proclaim to them, unless someone is sent? Okay? Again, the context is everything in the Bible study. But call on him. Abram already is a believer. At least he obeyed God out of Ur to this point. All this. He's built an altar before. When we get to Genesis 15, it even goes into more detail. Whether or not he was saved at this point, I don't know. That's kind of contradictory, isn't it, to what I just said. He's one who believes in God, for sure. You can say that. Okay? Whether or not he is one who has been saved. He believes this God that has contacted him, enough to leave his home, his family, and to offer an altar. We're going to talk about it, Genesis 15. Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Okay? So Abram calls on the name of the Lord. Abram gets back to his spiritual moorings. Notice, from what I can tell, he didn't do any altars in Egypt. Any idea why? This is speculation. We're guessing. Well, he hadn't done right, exactly. He trusted in Abraham rather than trusting in the God of Abraham, right?
He probably saw him in need.
Well, and he was doing things on his own, right? He gets back. He gets kicked out of Egypt. He goes back to Israel, and he goes back to his moorings again. He gets back, if you will, right with God, it seems like, or reestablishes contact with God. Abraham, that doesn't mean God wasn't connected, watching over him, right, and all that. Abraham gets back to his spiritual moorings. What is your response after you blow it? Is that a good question? What's the hardest thing to do when you sin against God? Isn't it easier to keep doing sin? I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes it's easier to give up than get right. At least we think that. Sin just keeps trapping and trapping and trapping. It's easier to give up rather than to confess it and get right with God. And the idea is, just because we fail, look at Abram. Did he do right? No, it appears that he told a half-truth and it got him into a bunch of trouble. And God, even though God didn't have to do it, he got him out of it. All right? Abram goes back and starts worshiping God again. That should be our response. When we blow it, keep worshiping God. Keep walking with God. God knows all about it. Jesus completely paid for it. He wants you to confess it. Right? Just like we talked about in 1 John. It's sin. It was wrong. God, here I am. I'm worshiping you. I'm calling on your name again. That should be our response when we blow it. And everyone here blows it. I'm only guessing. No one told me. Right? Okay? Keep walking with God. Now, number three, I noticed I didn't have blanks where I thought he did. So I won't write in anything. Other than the first part there. Abraham and Lot struggle. Abram, rather. He hasn't named Abraham. Abraham and Lot struggle. They just both have a lot of stuff. Lot also, who went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents. He was doing pretty well himself. Who was Lot again? Abraham's nephew, right? Son of Nahor, right? Lot went with him. And I don't know, it seems that Lot's always a problem. Should Abraham have taken him or not? I don't know. That's speculation. But it seems like wherever Lot went, a lot went on. That's a pun, by the way. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. Again, it reminds me of our playroom. No toys. Please, no more toys. Oh, guess what we got for birthday? Toys! And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. They just didn't have enough room. Livestock needs space. They need grazing space. They need, you know, wells to drink from and all that. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land, so they had to deal with other people. So here's some quick principles. People problems are part of life, right? Anyone here live with people or around people? Don't you hate people sometimes? Don't you hate being a people sometimes? That's probably... You know, it's the idea. We used to joke about it. You know, the world would be great if it wasn't for people. Idea. Churches would be great if it wasn't for people. Marriages would be great. Families would be great if it wasn't for people. People problems are just part of it. Anytime you have people together, there will be conflict, there will be struggle. That isn't the problem. The problem is how you deal with it. Okay? I heard someone say one time about, like, the Church of Corinth. By the way, Paul addresses them as saints of God. That's their standing. Their practice wasn't so hot, wasn't so saintly. They were saved, they just weren't living like it. They were carnal, some of them and all. But he said, the person that said this, what makes a Christian church is not that they don't have problems. It's that they deal with problems in a Christian way. What makes a Christian home, is not that they don't have problems, it's they deal with problems in a Christian way. Right? Problems are there. That's just part of it. Economic problems are part of life. Can I get a witness? You know, wow. What a world we live in right now, right? When we run out and fill up our gas tank because it's down to $3.29 a gallon or whatever. Okay? And meat. You find something for $1.99 and you're like, you get greedy? You know, whatever. So, economic problems are part of life. There's always something to fix, something to buy, something to pay for, whatever. Or even just, this is logistically, how do I handle it? My house is not big enough. My car's not big enough. My car won't make the trip. We got the kids stacked four high already in their bed. Not really, but I'm teasing. But, you know, there's economic problems are part of it. Major decisions are part of it. If they had to decide something, it wasn't just, can't we all get along? The answer was no. They didn't fit. Okay? They had to do something. Major decisions are part of life. Now, what are possible responses to this problem? Lot and Abram and all their stuff couldn't dwell together. There was just too much of them. Help me out. What are different responses? I'm not saying just good responses. Abram could have just been strong-armed and just said, pushed him. Could have even taken everything. I'm just, what yours is mine, and well, what mine is mine, and here's a nice hole to live in and die in or whatever. Okay? He could have just pulled rank, as we call it in the military, and said, hey, I'm bigger, stronger than you. This is what I'm going to do. You go over here, right? Ignore the problem. And it doesn't fix the problem. It just foments the problem, right? It just keeps getting worse. Because they're already fighting, and they're fighting because there's a problem there. Or who deserves to graze on the ground, the flat ground, instead of having to go on the hill, you know, or whatever. I remember someone, it was a group of pastors, actually. It was Acts chapter 6. I don't know if you recall. Acts chapter 6 where the, you know, the, there was a complaint arose among the Hellenists, the Greeks, the Jews that were Greek. They come from other places, not Jerusalem. They spoke Greek. They weren't being, their widows were being ignored in the daily ministration, the daily meals on wheels. People that didn't have family, they still need to be fed. The church did that. But they were being ignored, this group. The Jewish widows were being fed, but the Greek widows were not. One of the pastors said, well, it's just because of their sinful hearts. You know, that's why it was there. And it's like, I had to argue, and I said, no, it doesn't bring up sin. They complain. All complaining is sin. It's like, no, it's a legitimate complaint. You know, the tire's flat. The house is, the roof is leaking. It's not wrong to point that out. You know, you can, I suppose, complain the wrong way, but they complaint for them was a good thing. These women aren't getting fed. Hopefully someone's speaking up. It's not because of sin. You know, and maybe, you know, sinfulness, we were overlooking it, or maybe they were prejudiced toward the, against the, or maybe they, you know, they just weren't paying attention. They were dealing with the people they were dealing with. You know, their people. But they're addressing it like, oh, they shouldn't have been complaining. It's like, no, they should have been complaining. There was a problem. And the apostles didn't say, you sinners, why are you complaining? They said, no, this needs to be dealt with. These tables need to be served. We can't do it, or we will end up not doing what we're supposed to be doing. Let's choose seven men full of the Holy Spirit who can do this. So we can put in charge of that to make sure it gets done and taken care of. So they pick seven Greek named guys to handle it, right? Which works out good. You know, they knew the place, knew the territory, knew the people. So every problem is not a sin problem. It's a potential sin problem. You know, they could have fought. They could have, you know, pipe bummed the Greek lady's house, or you know, or whatever. And instead, they tried to address the problem. And it's, to me, in Acts 6, it worked the way it was supposed to. Okay? But just because there's problems doesn't mean it's something is wrong. It means it's the opportunity to handle it in a way that would honor God. Okay? Whether it's the flat tire, the leak in the roof, or the not enough money at the end of the month idea. Right? Those are all legitimate things. How do you respond to them in a biblical way? How do you respond to them in a way that is honoring to God? There's right ways and wrong ways.
Church is done in a pragmatic way, which is the path of least resistance. We do it because it's the easy way, or
avoiding confrontation that doesn't fix the problem.
Right.
Are you mean? Because this is pragmatic.
Yeah.
Pragmatism is doing what works. As long as the pragmatism is directed by biblical principles, there's absolutely nothing wrong with pragmatism. We use pragmatism all the time here. We move from out there into here because that's pragmatic. Tables, air conditioning, easier to cool, stuff like that, you know. But there's nothing that we're not violating biblical principles. So I would say, yeah, people do take the easy route rather than the right route oftentimes. And oftentimes the right route is harder. You know, it's harder to speak up.
Well, the incident you had before that you were talking about, Abram went into Egypt. You know, there was a famine in the land.
And it doesn't seem that he was wrong by doing it.
But, right.
Right.
But when he got down there,
he was wrong in how he dealt.
It was a snowball effect.
Yeah.
You know, of everything that was prior to it, because let's deceive this guy. Let's. And he was going down there for protection from the famine. And what he was doing, he was getting away from the protection of God.
Right. And opening up his wife
yes.
to being taken, which she was. So So yeah, I mean, he at that point he wasn't trusting God to keep his promise because he said, "You will be a father of many nations." Well, if he trusted God, then it's like, they can't kill me, right? Right? And by the way, Abraham grew in that because he had a son called Isaac, and God said, "Hey, you go sacrifice him." Maybe it was dealing with the same kind of thing. And he said, "Okay." And in Hebrews it says he believed that if God would allow him to kill him, God would raise him up because he said, "That's the son of promise." He said, "Isaac is the son whom all these people will come from. If I kill him, God will have to raise him up." He trusted God that much by then, so my had he grown. And it wasn't really starting until he was like 75 to kind of some of this stuff clicking in, right? Yeah, so it's very good. It's Abraham encourages me. You know, I can learn. You can still keep learning and growing. Number four, Abram graciously gives Lot the choice. Isn't this something? Of all the things he could have done, he could have strong-armed, which, again, pulling rank, authority, whatever. Abraham graciously gives Lot the choice, and I'll just put choice up here. He says, "Look around. Separate from me. We can't obviously stay together. You pick whatever you want. I'll go the other way." Wow. You talk about humble. You talk about gracious. You talk about kind. Welcome to Abram. That's the kind of man he was. And by the way, he was letting God worry about the details, right? Because he knew God had... Didn't he have the promise of God? That God said, "This is all my land. You get out of here." He could have said that, right? And he said, "No, I believe." At least it looks at this point, he's thinking in his mind, "You know what? I believe what God says. No matter what Lot chooses, it won't steal from me. Because God's going to keep his promise to me." Okay? What was Abram's response? "Hey, we'll solve it the best way possible with no strife. No, nothing between us." Notice here he says, "We're brethren." Boy, does that... I wish I could have had the time to show you in Acts 15. They're fighting over whether or not Christians should be circumcised. In other words, do they have to become Jews before they become Christians? In Acts chapter 15. And Peter, as fiery as Peter could be, he addresses them as brethren. He stays on the level of, we're on the same team here. Okay? He talks to them, and that's what Abraham, "Hey, we're on the same team. We're brethren. We're brethren. We don't need to fight. We don't have this." And then he says, "Is not the whole land before you? Pick which way you go." Would this be your response? Again, we've already looked at responses. Listen, think about how God would want you to respond to any potential trouble that comes. Economic, people, major decisions, all of that. We need to look to God, don't we? As I put us back to that often, if not too often quoted verse, I don't think you can quote it too often, but trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on what? Your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will direct your paths. He'll literally says, make your path straight. He'll smooth it out. Smooth out your path. Okay? And it's like, would this be your response? I don't even think it would have crossed my mind. I'm just being honest. But now that Abraham brought it up, yeah, that's what I would have chosen. Okay? Now that, oh yeah, when you think about it, you know what? That's the most gracious thing, and that's the most trusting toward God thing that he could have done. He wasn't being stupid. He was being faithful to God. And he's like being gracious and generous to his nephew. Number five, Lot chooses poorly. Why do I say that? Lot chose purely what it looks like on what he could see with his eyes. And I put it down in your notes here. Lot chose visually. These are written down. Selfishly. He chose the best. He chose the best land. And he chose thoughtlessly. And we'll get into why in a sec here. Do I have the map? Here's the color map. You can't read it any better than the dark man. They're up here in Bethel, around here, okay? Kind of smack dab in the middle. What does it say? Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan. Just color code here a little bit. Help me out. Here's the plain of Jordan. He was here up in the mountains, by the way. They're looking down. They could see that. Just looking around. I'll take the best land. He chose for what he saw. Was it wrong in and of itself? No. It ended up destroying his family, though. Because he was not mature enough to stay in the plains of Jordan. He chased after other things that he saw. Okay? He chose visually. He saw it. And it's like maybe he should have thought about other things that went on. Right? He chose selfishly. I'll take the best for myself. Instead of letting Abram do it. Okay? By the way, Abram had kind of established himself in some level of righteousness. We don't know anything about Lot really until now. And then Lot chose thoughtlessly, and we all know what happened to Lot's family. He wasn't thinking about his family. He apparently was thinking about his pocketbook. He was thinking, Hawaii, or so, you know, in his mind. Oh, this is beautiful. The sheep will grow really well. You know, I'll be the superpower. So what happens? Number 12, it's not number 12, verse 12. Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan. He's up here in the mountains. This is the highlands. This is like Hard Worksville. Everything is up or down. Okay? And Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. Now notice, I gave you two maps on the back. I gave you this one. It's a little smaller than this. I blew this one up. But here's Israel. You have the Sea of Galilee up top. It's a little, it looks like a little carrot almost. And then down below is the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea. Okay? There's where they were, Bethel. And Lot goes all the way down to Sodom. So he's going, and you can see on your, here's the colored map. Sodom is right here down the bottom of the Dead Sea, or Sodom's here in Gomorrah. So he travels all around to the big cities. Okay? And something was already true about Sodom, for example. Notice what he said. The men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Lot's poor choice continues. Okay? Is it wrong to want the plane? No. It's selfish? Probably. But he didn't stop there. He kept yielding to the temptations that are there. And it doesn't say that he necessarily sinned. He just got really close to sin. Does that make sense? That's what I'm talking about here. He makes more poor choices. Number 6 or 7. Abraham follows through. Number 7, Lot makes more poor choices. 6 already, there's nothing to write. More poor choices. Okay? Notice here, he saw the land. That's in verse 10. Saw all the plain of Jordan. It was well watered before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. A lot of people think that part of the Dead Sea is now underwater where Sodom and Gomorrah were. Dr. Kober has a great study on that. There's all kinds of asphalt and stuff that boils up from the south end of Sodom and Gomorrah, or the Dead Sea there and all. He chose in verse 11, he chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, by the way. That sounds kind of selfish too, right? I don't want some of it. I want all of it. All the plain of Jordan. See, everything that's connected to the river, Uncle Abraham, that's mine. Okay, that's extremely selfish, needless to say. And then he journeyed east, because he was in Bethel, right? He's right here, and he journeys east to get to there. And then he dwelt in the cities of the plain. So now he gets to the cities. There's a whole bunch of study we could do on that. But do you remember what in Genesis, I think it's Genesis 1. I know it's Genesis 1. But be fruitful, multiply, and hang all around together. Yeah, fill the earth, right, in the New King James. Spread out. After the flood, they had the same problem. So God confused their languages and made it happen anyway, right? Spread them out. I don't know if you noticed this, but when people get together, sin happens. Where's the most extreme areas of sin? Big cities. Okay, now that doesn't mean now you can't pump in big city into your living room with cable or whatever. Okay? It's a lot more easy now to be in the big city, in the wrong place of the big city. But the big cities is where all this kind of sin happens. It seems that God likes us to be friends but not be on top of each other. Okay? It kind of compounds sin. All right? That's a study in and of itself. But then he pitched his tent as far as Sodom. He's all the way down to the bump here. So he's working down to these five or six cities that are terrible that God ends up saying, I can't wait till the end of the world. They have to be wiped out now. They're that bad. So Lot makes more poor choices. Number eight, God repeats and expands his land promise. He repeats and expands his land promise. And he also comments more on his descendants. I need to do a compare all the different times God promised things to see how much he adds. But notice here, he said, Lot, look around. Pick wherever you want. I'll go the other way. God shows up. Hadn't said anything more to Abram, right? He shows up and does kind of the same thing, only he says, look around. Everything you see will be yours and your descendants. He kind of echoes the graciousness of Abram, only all the way around, 360 degrees. You don't have to go anywhere. Notice, God takes care of Abram's Lot's choice, right? Because he can still see everything that Lot sees, including the plain of Jordan. Lot chose it. Somehow my descendants are all going to have it when it's all over with. Right? Northward, southward, eastward, westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants. What's the next word? Forever. I'm a dispensationalist. One of the things that I believe is that God will keep his promise to Abraham. His physical seed as well as his spiritual seed. Those are two separate entities. Okay, and you see that at the end, God reestablishes the kingdom of David, which is an expansion of Abraham's covenant, by the way. And they rule forever, okay? Notice verse 16, I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth. Now again, I got to look and see what God had said before. But I think this is an expansion on that too. Okay, God hadn't described it quite this way. And I'm going to make your descendants like the dust of the earth. So if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants could also be numbered. You're just going to have so many you won't be able to count. Arise, walk the land, its length, its width, for I give it to you. Okay? Abraham makes good choices. God blesses him. Expands on the blessings. Okay? Both for land and seed. Remember he said land, seed, and blessing. Abraham's already very what?
Old.
Rich. He's very old too. He's going to be very, very old then before it's all over. Number nine. Isn't it interesting? Abraham continues his worship of God. He doesn't let the whole promise of God thing get in the way of him worshiping God. Sometimes Christianity can get in the way of our Christianity, can't it? We get so arrogant and we get so proud or whatever, and then we forget that we need to walk with God as opposed to just take God for granted. Yes. Questions or comments?